Where do you go for cutting-edge interviews and the hottest topics around? Right here, The Line of Fire, starting now.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Hello, my name is Autumn, and I'm 16 and would like to talk to you about an article recently posted by Teen Vogue called What to Get a Friend Post-Abortion. And since I'm a teen, this was directed towards me, and I would like to respond.
We're going to hear from 16-year-old Autumn today on The Line of Fire. We were scheduled to have her on earlier in the week, had to reschedule for today. You don't want to miss that important interview coming your way in a matter of minutes. This is Michael Brown. Welcome to The Line of Fire, your voice of moral sanity and spiritual clarity in the midst of a society in chaos and a church all too often in compromise. It is my joy to be with you today, and I want to encourage you with the truth. You can have a voice today. Yes, by God's grace, I have a louder voice through radio, through TV, through writing articles, through preaching and teaching and other means, through books. But everyone today has a voice. We all have a voice in prayer. You can get alone with God and pray, and He hears your voice when you pray. And there's nothing more important than God hearing your voice. Having God hear your voice is more important than having people hear your voice. But these days, through internet, through social media, everybody can have a voice. If you've got something on your heart, you can be on Facebook, you can be on Twitter or Instagram or whatever it is, and you can post what you're thinking. You can put a video on YouTube, and if God desires to spread that message, He can do it. And more than that, wherever you live, you have a voice. If you see something wrong in your household, you have a voice. If you see something wrong in the school system where your kids are going, you have a voice as a parent. Whatever setting you find yourself in, you can make a difference. I want to encourage you. Now is the time for us as God's people to swim against the tide, to go against the grain, and to make a difference. Now is the time for us as God's people to be the salt and the light. Now is the time for us to raise our voices. If a 16-year-old girl who's burdened about an article in Teen Vogue, which is reaching kids her age and younger, and saying, here's what you get a friend that's had an abortion, and she can now speak in a way that is heard around the nation. If some 10-year-old or 9-year-old kid that identifies as transgender get on the flip side of this, they want to talk about their own lives, and the parent helps them with YouTube, or some just do it on their own these days, and next thing, hundreds of thousands of people have watched it. If someone could just be burdened about something and post something on Facebook and it gets shared hundreds of thousands of times, everyone can have a voice and make a difference. And maybe there'll only be 10 people that heard what you had to say, but one of them will end up being an influential leader in the society, and your word to them has a life-changing impact. So everybody has a voice. Let that be the lesson today, because in the second half of this first hour, we're going to speak to an activist mommy, as she calls herself, a homeschooling mom who posted scripture verse on Facebook and had her Facebook account temporarily shut down. She has a voice as well, so I want to encourage you. Now is the time to make a difference. Later in the broadcast, we're also going to speak with Robert Shively about twisting of Title IX. You'll want to know about this. You'll find it very, very interesting. And I did a Twitter poll. I did a Twitter poll last night, and the results of that, I wasn't surprised. But I think you may be surprised to hear the results of this Twitter poll, all coming your way today on The Line of Fire.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
The article said it doesn't have to be so scary, but I think we can all agree abortion is scary. No one skips into that room as if they're getting their hair highlighted or their nails painted. And just for the record, the thought of going into a room and having my baby surgically removed from my body is both terrifying and scary. And none of these gifts would make me feel better.
All right. So again, we played these clips for you earlier in the week. You may have missed them. This is a 16-year-old girl named Autumn, part of Students for Life. And she is reacting to this idea, that Teen Vogue article that says, hey, you have a friend that had an abortion, get him this gift or that gift. And some things just utterly trivial and more like kind of more power to you for having an abortion. And she has a very strong reaction to this. So we were scheduled to have Autumn on earlier in the week, and we are having a hard time connecting today. I'm not going to say the devil's trying to stop it. Well, it could well be. But hopefully we'll resolve these issues momentarily and bring this young woman on. But again, let me encourage you. First thing, when you see something that frustrates you, when you see something that bothers you, when you see something that grieves you, use your voice to talk to God about it. Don't just get upset. Don't just get burdened. Don't just get angry. All of those emotions are understandable, and sometimes there's a righteous anger we have and a righteous grief that we have, all right? But before you do any of that and let that dominate, turn that into prayer. God, I'm upset. God, this really grieves me. God, this really hurts me. God, this really concerns me. God, I feel like the world's going crazy. Father, I don't know how to respond to this. Father, would you act? Father, would you move? Father, would you work? So what you do is you first turn your voice to God in prayer. And that is the ultimate thing you can do. That is the number one thing you can do, is turn your voice to God in prayer. And then say, Father, use me to make a difference. Use me to make a difference. It could be that you have an assignment to pray, that you have an assignment to pray for others to stand up and to speak because they'll have a greater platform. It could be that you get a specific burden to pray, say that God will turn the tide in secular media, or maybe you'll get burdened to pray for the makeup of the Supreme Court or something else like that. All right, so you want to give yourself again to God in prayer, so your voice can be used, and then say, Lord, use me to make a difference. Lord, use me to bring about help. Father, here I am. I'm available. God raises up very unlikely people. Sometimes he raises up people that are quite likely and quite as expected and quite, yeah, I see why God's using this person. But many other times, God raises up people that are not what you were expecting. Not who you're expecting, and yet he works through it anyway. He works through unlikely vessels. So don't count yourself out. Don't say, well, God could never use me because I'm just, what, just what? Just a grandmother? Just a teenager? Just a housewife? Just a computer programmer? Just a pastor? Just a custodian? Just a kid? Just a retiree? Just what? Who is it that God says he's going to use? I mean, show me in Scripture that you have to be certain education or God won't use you. Certain height, God won't use you. Certain complexion or God won't use you. Certain temperament or God won't use you. Certain ethnicity or God won't use you. Certain amount of ministry experience or God won't use you. Show me that. Oh yes, there are for sure things that we are called to in terms of character if we're going to be entrusted with a spiritual position. In other words, if you're going to be a pastor or an elder, then you have to be grounded in the Word, and you have to have godly character, and you can't be a novice, and all these things are important. But I'm talking about God using someone for a purpose at any moment. You never know who he wants to use And if you make yourself available, you'd be surprised. There may be gifts in you that you didn't know were in there. There may be a calling of God on your life that you didn't know was there. There may be an influence that you had that you didn't know was there. Or you may become convinced of your absolute emptiness and bankruptcy, which then drives you to God in prayer, And you say, Lord, I feel like I have nothing to offer. Lord, I want to speak, but I have nothing to say. Can I just share something from my own life? Being able to speak, being able to preach, teach, God enabled me to do that early on when I was 18. I started preaching for the first time. And, you know, a few weeks ago, I was in Florida recording shows for God TV, and we recorded 16 30-minute shows. 16 30-minute shows in 2 days. And it was easy. I didn't have notes. It flowed. I'm anointed to preach, to speak. Before I was saved, I had good use of words. Unfortunately, I was full of sin and rebellion and ugliness, so my use of words was not good, and I was vicious and ugly with my tongue, but I was a talker. When I got saved, then God changed my tongue and changed my attitude and changed my heart, and then anointed me to preach and enabled me to preach and enabled me to teach. And that's why I'm on talk radio, because I'm a talker. It's natural for me to do this. But for years, I felt called to write. For 17 plus years, I felt called to write, and I had no release to write. You may not know this, but as a new believer, I felt this calling to write. It's nothing we talked about in our church. We didn't have this thing about being anointed to be an author. You're kind of a pastor or an evangelist, and those were the callings. And I felt this anointing to write, this calling to write. And I would write an essay in my college class. And the professor would say, you write well, you're an excellent writer, and so on. But when I would preach, I could always preach a simple, clear message. I can do academic work. Trust me, I can write something where I'm confused by what I wrote. You know, I can do this elite academic work, all right? I can teach at a seminary and teach, you know, a whole class, an intensive class in a week, teach a one semester class in a week, no problem. But when it came to writing, in a simple way, I could preach in a simple way, but when I would go to write, it would come out technical, it would come out scholarly, it would get messed up. And I thought, what in the world? What in the world's going on? What in the world? Why can't I? And I'd feel called. I'd feel the Lord saying, write. And I couldn't. I'd write a page, and then it would get bogged down, it would get technical, it would get scholarly. It's like, what's the matter? Well, what did it do? It drove me to prayer. It frustrated me, because I felt the calling. I felt the calling, but I wasn't able to act on it. And I felt God saying, write, and I didn't have the release to write. And then something began to happen. 1989, the floodgates opened wide. And next thing I know, I'm writing book after book after book, and basically about 30 books since then, some of them scholarly, but most of them popular. But for 17-plus years, I felt this calling and didn't have the release. So what do you do? You pray. You pray. You pray. I felt God say to me to speak to the nation on radio, but I had no outlet on radio. I felt him say to me to speak to the nation about moral cultural issues, but I had no outlet. I couldn't even get the local newspaper to print. Every so often they'd print an op-ed piece of mine. So what did I do? I prayed, because I felt God saying, speak, but I didn't have an outlet. I had the gift, but I didn't have the outlet. Speak. I'm on radio right now because God answered those prayers. I'm on radio right now because God, by his grace, anointed me to bring a message and open the doors to do it. But for years, those doors were closed. So here you have a 16-year-old girl, all right? She may be well-known in her circle of friends. She's gifted. She competes at the national level in the National Christian Forensics and Communications Association for Speech and Debate, member of Students for Life of America, spends time with her local group working in the pro-life movement. But otherwise, I didn't know her name. I never heard of her. But she gets burdened, and she wants to get a message out, and she puts out a video. And we finally connected with this clear-headed, courageous young woman, Autumn. And we've got a break coming up. So we come back. We're going to hear from her directly. Listen, by God's grace, she's speaking to people all across the nation and to young people in particular. and waking up a culture. Why? Because she got a burden. She was disturbed by this ridiculous article in Teen Vogue. You could say trivializing abortion. You could say celebrating abortion. What to get your friend that had an abortion. She got burdened to do something about it. And she put this video together. And for a 16-year-old, you think, wow, that is clear-headed. That is articulate. That is powerful. That is pointed. That's a message. She got a burden. She acted on it. And God has promoted the message. We're going to talk to Autumn when we come back.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, welcome back to the broadcast. We finally connect with Autumn. Hey, Autumn, I played your clips twice this week and introduced you twice. Glad to finally get you on the air.
Yes, thank you so much for having me.
So Autumn, how is it that you came to put out this video? And did you imagine that it would get the attention that it got as you responded to Teen Vogue's article on what to get your friend who had an abortion?
I did not. I had actually no expectation of how big this would get and how many people it would spread to. It just started with me reading this article and being extremely offended that Teen Vogue would even post something like this. And so it was something that we were discussing in our home, and I decided I wanted to do something about it, whether or not a lot of people heard it or not. So I recorded the video, and then I contacted Students for Life and asked if they'd like to share it. And then from there, it really just spread a lot further than I had expected.
Now, Autumn, Teen Vogue, I've read, had something like 60 articles already this year that were pro-abortion. Is this typical of what your generation is getting exposed to?
Yes. I think media has a very strong pull, especially on my generation, because that's what we're influenced by. It's what we see on our phones, on our laptops. It's what we discuss. And so Teen Vogue pushing abortion so many times is just feeding into what our culture is teaching this generation. I think it's very typical for magazines like this to promote it, to try to normalize abortion to this next young generation of people.
And yet, Autumn, it seems that your generation at this stage of life is more pro-life than the last generation growing up in the immediate aftermath of the 60s and Roe v. Wade seeming like it was going to be here forever and couldn't be challenged. With all the media and social media bombardment that is pushing abortion, why do you think that the younger generation seems to have more pro-life sentiments than some of the older generation?
Yes, this is the pro-life generation. We are the pro-life generation. What's starting to happen is science is coming out and proving that this is a human life and it is a child. And so it's kind of changing. Back in the 50s, a lot of people did believe that it was just a clump of cells. But I think as time goes on, we're realizing that's not the case. And more people are becoming informed on what abortion actually is. And that's why, organizations like Students for Life is so vital, because they are reaching out to the generation that's going to change things. This next generation is often called, again, the pro-life generation. And so I think these, next couple years, hopefully, are really going to change things in our culture.
Now, Autumn, obviously, we have ultrasounds now, which previous generation didn't have. When our daughters were born almost 40 years ago, you waited when the child was born, you found out if it's a boy or a girl. Now, not just knowing that, but you can actually see, the baby moving and it's got its hands folded and all these things. It's very difficult to further dehumanize the baby. What about the effect of abortion on young people when they have abortion? Do you have reports like that where the kids are traumatized by it, or you find out that women have been traumatized by it and that you can't just continue to glorify it the way society's tried to do?
Mm-hmm. I have family members who've been hurt by abortion And I think one of the main problems is that if our culture is trying so hard to normalize it, they don't talk about what abortion is actually like. So women don't realize that until after they've made that decision and after they've gone through the trauma, and it's something you can't go back on. So the way that our culture talks about it is doing no one any good because they're not discussing the true effects of abortion. Again, they're trying to celebrate it and make it seem like a lighthearted procedure that, you know, women can go through if they simply aren't ready to be a parent. But what people don't understand is that abortion leaves women hurt and broken. And so if we try to, approach it the way that Teen Vogue did, it's not accomplishing anything. You know, abortion is wrong, and it is murder. So trying to paint it as such a simple solution is going to be really harmful, especially, you know, not only to the children, but to the women who are deciding to have these abortions.
Do you think perhaps, Autumn, that this Shout Your Abortion movement, where women were going to shout out the abortions they had and again, celebrate it, you think that might be an unconscious way of covering up pain?
Yes. I think what's interesting is a lot of women will say, you know, I think a lot of women don't regret their abortions. I hear from women all the time that they're happy with their decisions. But unfortunately, a lot of women don't have any other choice. They don't want to tell someone, you know, that they regret their decision and they're hurt by it. So they cover it up by trying to make it seem like the right decision. I think oftentimes, you know, if we tell ourselves this is okay, this is the right decision, this is what I needed to do, we'll start to believe that. And so I think that's what a lot of women try to do. And so influencing that by preaching that to our generation and our culture, will just end up being harmful in the end.
Yeah. So, Autumn, you obviously have friends, classmates who are pro-life, and then you mm-hmm. have some who are, quote, pro-choice, whether they're close or distant, folks you connect with on social media. What's been the reaction among your classmates and friends to your video?
It's been interesting, actually. I've gotten a lot of great feedback. Most of the negativity comes from people that I don't know, mm-hmm. Which is typical. But for the most part, it's actually been interesting because a lot of pro-choice people have actually shared the video and they're able to agree with a lot of the things I said. Because I think most people would agree that abortion is a big deal, whether or not they agree with it or not. And so just in general, the way that Teen Vogue approached it was disrespectful just to the women who have gone through abortions. For the most part, again, the responses have been pretty positive. But then again, there are those people that are very strongly for abortion and they did not like what I had to say regarding the issue.
And obviously, as a woman, you can speak more forcefully than I can as a man because, you know, the whole my body, my choice argument is going to come up. Nonetheless, it's a universal moral issue. Certainly, you do debates. Certainly, you've been involved in discussing issues. You know that flack, negative response is going to come your way. But when you get some of the really ugly, ugly, ugly stuff, and they assault you as a person in ways that you wouldn't even want to repeat, how has that felt to you? How has that affected you when you get slammed like that?
For the most part, I've tried to kind of just, you know, not really read into it, mainly because I think the easiest thing for people to attack would be my age. I've heard a lot, you know, you're 16, you don't understand what women go through. You have no authority to say anything that you're saying. You're simply brainwashed and you've been fed to say all of this. And so it's actually hard not to respond to a lot of those false accusations against me. But again, for the most part, I try to just stay out of it, stay positive, because I know that this is a message that so many people need to hear. And so paying too much attention to all the negativity probably wouldn't be the best idea.
And one thing is, Autumn, even attacks against you personally, they're really not against you. They're against the issue. And then it's a sign that you hit a nerve. It's a good sign, often. And Jesus promised us we'd have this resistance standing up for righteousness. Hey, stay right there. I've just got one or two more questions for you. Delighted to speak with you today.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
You know, one other good thing when you get attacked, or especially on social media, when people can hide behind anonymity, or even if they use their names, hide behind a screen rather than say things face to face, often the anger that comes your way is the result of people responding in hurt. And if we can learn to look for something deeper and figure out how to minister to them rather than to react to their anger, we can really be used by God. I'm speaking with Autumn, 16 years old, her video response to Teen Vogue's article on what to give a friend that had an abortion has been viewed far more than she expected. So, Autumn, your own upbringing, how has that shaped your thinking? What environment were you raised in that's given you such a passion to be so strongly pro-life at such a young age?
I've grown up in a Christian home my entire life. It's very gospel-centered, and so that's what I've grown up in. Also, just kind of competing in speech and debate, it's given me the tools to be able to discuss things that I am passionate about. I write a lot of speeches that I spend a lot of time thinking about and writing and memorizing and presenting. And so I've trained my mind to be able to talk about things that I'm really passionate about. And then that mixed with, you know, just being taught about the gospel and, you know, God's love and mercy and grace, being able to incorporate that. And so when we're discussing the issue of abortion, it's something that I'm really passionate about. And so being able to approach that in a way that, you know, doesn't necessarily condemn women who have had abortions, but also still get the point of across that this is a very wrong, evil thing that our culture is very strongly promoting. But I'd say one of the most essential things in order to do any of that is first having an understanding of the gospel and God's word.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, as a debater myself, obviously one of the most important things is to be able to present the position that you differ with in such a way that those that hold that position would say, okay, you understand and you've presented it adequately. So, you know, to debate the other side in a convincing way shows, okay, I understand where you're coming from. And then to always remember as you're speaking that you are going to be speaking to people that have had abortions and that it opens up an old wound. And to always have that, the gospel solution, the gospel forgiveness, gospel redemption in your message is essential. So, Autumn, we've got about 2 minutes left. What would you say to other young people that agree with you, but they're afraid to speak out, they don't want to be ostracized, they don't want to be insulted, rejected? What would you say to them?
I would say that it takes people who are willing to speak out for things to change. Abortion is such a big issue right now, and if you're willing to speak out against it, there's going to be flack and you're going to get, you know, hate from that. But I would encourage them not to discourage them from speaking truth. I would say one of the most important things is to be able to discuss issues like this coming from, you know, a state of understanding and love. In a way that you're able to present your argument while still sharing truth. Because I think people my age and younger and older, you know, have the tools to change things. All they need is to be able to speak up or even just getting involved in the pro-life movement any way that they can, whether that's donating to a local pregnancy clinic or, you know, getting involved in a Students for Life group near them, I think is extremely important in the fight in the pro-life movement, is just getting as many young people not only passionate about this issue, but excited and wanting things to change.
Yeah, absolutely. And Autumn, I love it. This is the pro-life generation. You are going to grow up with your kids in a very different world by God's grace. Let it be. Hey, keep up the great work. We're cheering you on.
Thank you.
All right.
It It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome, friends, to The Line of Fire. So we go from speaking to a 16-year-old pro-life teen to a mother of 10, Elizabeth Johnston, married 19 years to her husband, Patrick, who's a medical doctor. She's an activist vlogger who educates about current events and topics that are important to families, and recently came to national attention because of something that happened to her on Facebook. Hey, Elizabeth, first, as a mother of 10 and homeschooler, my hat's off to you. Even if that's your entire bio right there, my hat is off to you. Great to have you on the air.
Thank you, Dr. Brown. I have respected you for many years, and so I appreciate you having me on.
Oh, it's a joy to do it. We have common friends with the Benham brothers, and a friend
of the Benhams is
a friend of mine. So,
amen. I feel the same.
First, before we get to the recent event with Facebook, talk to me about the worldview that you and your husband have, that you can celebrate 10 children and be homeschooling your children and do it with joy and vigor. What fuels your fire?
Oh, just a love for Jesus and His Word. We want to raise up a generation of young people who love God and build His kingdom. And we believed that homeschooling our children and welcoming as many children as the Lord blessed us with was the best way for us to accomplish those goals.
Got it. And tell me about your online writing, your blogging. What do you do? Your video blogging. How does this work?
Yes, it's just something I started about 9 months ago. Really, when the whole transgender bathroom issue became really important, as a mother, I was very concerned about what was going on and the effect of the transgender bathroom guidance from Obama and Target, all of that. I was very concerned about that, and so I started making videos really on not just that issue, but any burning issue of the day. I believe that God's Word speaks to the burning issues of the day and has all the answers that we need. And so I began to apply God's Word to those issues, to whether it's political or just cultural issues in the news. And, I mean, I've been blessed in a short period of time to garner a following, and we're just going to continue to do what we're doing by God's grace and lift up the Lord Jesus Christ.
Well, let me play the transgender advocate for a minute. Why care? Why care about what happens in bathrooms? Let people have their privacy. You know, you got a guy struggling with gender identity. He's more comfortable in the ladies' room. Why get uptight about that? Why butt into other people's business?
Well, I'm very concerned. Not particularly necessarily that transgenders are trying to take advantage of the situation, but very concerned about the potential for men pretending to be women entering into the restrooms, locker rooms, shower rooms of our daughters. And this is insanity. This has got to stop. We have completely lost our minds in this culture, and not only us mama bears, but the men of God have to find their voice and speak out on this issue, as our friends David and Jason have done so effectively in North Carolina.
And, you know, the other thing is, even if someone is genuinely confused and not a predator, there are issues where you got little kids in a ladies' room and a man comes walking out, someone that's visibly a man. Or say you're in the YMCA in the locker room changing before you go work out, and here's someone that's a biological male. Even if the person's not a predator, these are issues where people are now butting into our business. Are they not?
Yes, and I've seen it in my own children, especially last year when the transgender topic was in the news a lot. You know, I saw the anxiety in my own daughters as they entered the bathroom and were concerned if they were going to be, you know, met with a man in the bathroom. But the truth of it is there is an agenda afoot to blur all distinctions between males and females. And it is an attack on the family. And, you know, now we see yesterday a big story, Tony the tampon, Tony the transgender tampon being foisted upon our children. Again, just trying to desensitize the minds of our children to this notion of God made male and female.
Yep.
We have to revive that. Unfortunately, it's shocking that I even have to utter those words, that we have to revive the concept of male and female.
And you know what's wild? I was planning on actually writing on several examples of what I call transanity. I have compassion for I have compassion for those who struggle with gender identity confusion. I have compassion on those with biological chromosomal abnormalities that would be called intersex. But that has nothing to do with declaring war on gender distinctions or trying to blur things.
Absolutely not.
So my latest article is called Menstruating Men and the Latest Examples of Transanity. So I was starting to write on this, and within a few minutes, I get three different emails from three different people. Have you seen this? Have you seen this? Have you seen this? Have you seen this thing about Tony the tampon that teaches how men can have periods? Have you seen about this father and daughter who are now going to become mother and son? Have you seen this pastor saying that God is transgender? And I said, all coming in my article. So this is something that comes knocking at our doors. And if your kids are in the public school system, it'll be knocking at their doors as well. So, Elizabeth, what happened now that suddenly got you in a position you didn't expect to be in?
Yes, what happened was I did a video about the Women's March. And that video went viral and had over 11 million views.
Mm.
And I was just, you know, dealing with the hypocrisy of the radical feminist movement in this video that I just filmed, you know, in my van, and talked about abortion and homosexuality and how those two issues are really a large thrust of the radical feminist movement. And this thing just, you know, went crazy, and it sent a lot of traffic to my page, not just to that video, but to every place on my page, you understand. When 11 million people watch your video, is just all of my other videos were being watched, which are a lot of them just Bible studies against homosexuality and abortion. And so that was wonderful. But I think that at that point, I became some type of, you know, threat, something that needed to be controlled. And so all of a sudden, Facebook banned me for 3 days because of a certain comment I made 6 months ago, Dr. Brown. This comment I made was deeply embedded in my page underneath one of my videos from 6 months ago. Now, you tell me they weren't hunting for something that they could try to ban me for. And so they claimed that my comments, which were simply commentary on what the Bible says about homosexuality, that violated Facebook's community guidelines.
Could it be construed as hate speech? Did you threaten people? Did you degrade people? Did you call them perverts that deserve to burn in hell and we should burn their houses down?
Absolutely not. No physical threat, no name calling, just commentary on what the Bible says about homosexuality. You can go to my page and find what those comments are. They're posted. And so anyway, I get banned for 3 days. When they release me from that ban and I'm back on Facebook, I immediately reposted my comments. I reposted the screenshots and I said, Facebook believes the Bible is hate speech. Help me make this post go viral. And it was totally going viral. And within a couple of hours, Facebook had banned me again. And this time they were going to make it hurt a little more. And it was for 7 days that I was banned. And, you know, I had 75,000 followers. I could not interact with them.
Oh, no, trust me. I've been banned a few times also. We're over 500,000 now. So trust me, when you use that as a vehicle of communication, it's a great tool. It can be used in a great way along with family, friendship, connection. But when, say, I write an article and post, I want people to know about it, or I'm about to do a debate or something, or we're going to preach somewhere and put it on Facebook Live, it is a great vehicle and tool. And suddenly you get muted, cut off. That's very disheartening.
You feel it, don't you?
I mean,
it can be crippling to your ministry and your effectiveness. And I mean, for some people, it is connected to their livelihood and their businesses. And so yes, I understand that. So anyway, when I got back on after 7 days, I had a choice to make. I was really concerned that Facebook was going to delete me permanently. And I had a choice to make. Was I going to be silent and just thank God that I had my page and my followers back? Or was I going to be a voice for all of the other conservatives and Christians who I now learned, because everyone was sending me their messages and their complaints and their evidence, who I now knew were being censored by Facebook. My heart was burdened for them, and I just wanted Mark Zuckerberg to admit that he is a liberal and that the platform is liberal and that they are censored.
And it's totally biased. Yeah, right. Stay right there. I've written a number of times about the censoring on Facebook and pointed out extraordinary double standard. Elizabeth's back on, loud and clear. What happened?
God of light, hear our cry. Send the fire.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I'm speaking with Elizabeth Johnson, homeschooling mother of 10, and courageous voice for God's order for male, female, as God intended it, for pro-life. Elizabeth, where can people connect with you? What's the best place?
My website is activistmommyofficial.com, and I am also on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube as the Activist Mommy. If they Google the Activist Mommy, all of those platforms should pop up for them.
All right. And Elizabeth, before that one video went viral where you were responding to the Women's March that was viewed by 11 million people, what would you say was your average viewing on a video?
Anywhere from 200,000 to maybe 600,000.
Okay, so you've already had a great video presence online and a lot of people following you, but this just somehow blasted out. All right, and again, that's a substantial following already. That's great views for the things you're saying. So what then happened? You decided you're going to take a stand, and it's the Jesus principle. If you try to save your life, you lose it. Well, I'll compromise here. I'll back off here. I won't do this anymore. And then you become a slave to people's opinions. You become a slave to what's popular, to what's trending, as opposed to just living to do God's will. So you were determined that you were going to raise your voice. So what happened?
Yes. So, you know, everybody likes to say, excuse me, that Facebook is a private company and they can do whatever they want. But the truth of it is, private companies are not allowed to discriminate against people based upon their political and religious beliefs. And so it's quite ironic that that the left wants to say, you know, stop whining, it's a private company, yet when a Christian florist or baker wants to object to participating in a homosexual wedding, they are forced to participate or lose their businesses or fined. And yet, you know, Mark Zuckerberg is wanting to say, I want to be allowed to censor the media and control what is being seen. Now, the truth of it is, when he got in trouble last year because former employees admitted that Facebook is controlling what we are seeing, that there is not a true freedom of the press, if you will, there, that they are controlling it, and that that they are influencing how things are trending and whatnot, Mark Zuckerberg did get concerned, and he called a meeting of conservatives. I don't know if you remember this.
Of course,
and,
sure.
You know, conservative media pundits like Glenn Beck and whatnot, to try to build a bridge and convince them that Facebook is unbiased and is not discriminating against them. But I am here to tell you I have an inbox full of current evidence, screenshots, and video footage proving that Facebook is presently censoring not only my page, but also the pages of countless conservatives and Christians.
And by censoring, do you mean shutting things down or choking distribution?
Mm-hmm. Both. So
yeah, I mean, I've pursued this several times, and a few times they've said, "Yeah, this what you were being, you know, choked. In other words, your distribution was being held back." These things were happening. And so we've pushed it, and I've noticed it again, a dramatic drop in reach. Mm-hmm. And I've pressed them, and just as of last week, I mm-hmm. said, something's going on here. You know, we're mm-hmm. over 500,000 people on our Facebook page, mm-hmm. and yet our reach is a fraction of what it was, you know, X number of months ago. And, you know, they
exactly.
said, no, there's nothing. So anyway, you know, it raises enough eyebrows. But I have had things shut down. I've had things shut down. Yeah, I'll give me one example. We had a post where as John Kerry sitting as a mediator between the leader of Hamas and Benjamin Netanyahu. And the leader of Hamas says, death to all Jews. That's like on his T-shirt. And then he's holding a little child, you know, his body armor in front of him. And Kerry says to Netanyahu, so you think you could meet him halfway? And that's the caption. So we got shut out of Facebook. And I wrote to the person I'm connected with there. I said, what in the world happened? They said, well, it's hate speech, death to all Jews. I said, we're talking about Hamas. We're not saying death to all Jews. I'm a Jew myself. And they go, oh, sorry, we misread it. But I would send them things. We would just, as a test, look for the most vile, horrific, anti-Jesus stuff on yeah. Facebook and then yeah. and then report it. No, this doesn't violate. No, this doesn't violate. No, this doesn't violate our
right.
community guidelines. And then you'd post something, just a friendly discussion about transgender
right.
issues, and next thing you get shut down. So the bias is unmistakable. So where do things stand now?
Yes, you're right. And what you're saying is exactly what I am having reported to me from all over the world. And I have two Facebook representatives right now that I'm in contact with that are supposed to be working on this, particularly as it involves my page, because I have evidence that my videos don't have share buttons for some people. People cannot even access my page, Dr. Brown. They go and they click on the icon of my page, my name, my picture, and their app shuts down on Facebook. I have video footage proving that this is happening to lots of people. You can't follow or like my page. Some people say you don't even have a follow or a like button. I have no way to like you and to get your information in my inbox. And so this is the evidence that I presented to Facebook. It's undeniable. You know, there's a picture, there's a video of Donald Trump having black ministers praying with him and them saying nice things about him. And it was going viral. It had like 9 million views. Facebook put a black cover over it and marked it as a graphic video, because black ministers were praying with Donald Trump. I have that evidence and imported that to Facebook. I mean, it's just obvious. There's no denying that they are censoring conservative and Christian speech. So here's what I would like. I would like for Mark Zuckerberg to admit that he has created a liberal news platform and that he is going to censor and control conservative and Christian speech on his platform. If he would admit that, then at least the public would know, and conservatives and Christians would flee to alternative platforms
yeah.
like Gab and Freedom Vine and Plum and all of these other platforms that are springing up because of the epidemic of censorship that we're experiencing.
Yeah, and it's on Twitter. I mean, look, Facebook celebrated their partnership with GLAAD, with other LGBT activist organizations.
Right.
They celebrated it. They announced it. In
right.
their mind, this was, you know, the positive thing to do. So yeah, and you know, Twitter losing people over this, hence these other alternatives. Listen, we'll check back with you in the days ahead. But in the meantime, keep doing what you're doing. This much we know. Whatever is going on with Facebook, we do know there's a clear bias. That's undeniable. That's been documented. They have basically celebrated this. They're being called to account for it. What we have to do is keep getting our message out. And from a 16-year-old girl to a homeschooled mother of 10, the message is God can get your message out to people. So, Elizabeth, we just got a couple of seconds. Are you backing down or speaking up all the more loudly?
Oh, all the more. Billy Graham said, courage is contagious. When a brave
yep.
man takes a stand, the spines of others are often stiffened. And so I want to take a courageous stand and stiffen the spines of others.
You keep doing it, Elizabeth. You are stiffening the spines of many. God bless you. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Dr. Brown.
All right, friends, you heard it. My bottom line, courage is contagious. Will you lead the way? Where do you go for cutting-edge interviews on the hottest topics around? Right here, The Line of Fire, starting now.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Well, thanks for joining us today on The Line of Fire. In the first hour, we heard from a 16-year-old champion of pro-life, a young lady who's speaking up and speaking out. We heard from a homeschool mother of 10, married mom of 10, homeschooler, and she is speaking out, and their messages are being listened to, watched, heard by hundreds of thousands, by millions of people. And that reminds me that God wants to use you to make a difference. Not just the TV preacher, not just the pastor standing behind the pulpit, not just the talking head on Fox News or CNN, not just the person writing an editorial in the newspaper, not just a political leader or a celebrity. God wants to use you to make a difference. Now, hear this. This, and I'm about to focus on another issue, another important issue that, will be very educational for you. And we're going to talk with a lawyer about something major that is affecting our schools and affecting young people around America. But before I get to that, I did a Twitter poll, and it's in its final stages now. Let's just see here. Maybe there are a few hours left on it, but I did this Twitter poll. Are you ready? I asked this question. Oh, let me find it here. Okay. Who do you trust more, Russia or the liberal media? So I've got, I don't know, 25,000 something followers on Twitter. So we're not nearly as big on Twitter as we are on Facebook, but still it's a decent amount of people that are there and mainly conservative like me and mainly Bible-believing like me, but plenty that differ, plenty that are downright hostile to my beliefs that would follow me on Twitter, and then others that are less conservative or less biblically based. So I asked this question, who do you trust more, Russia or the liberal media? Now think about that for a second. How would you answer that? I gave three choices, Russia, liberal media, or neither at all. Who do you trust more, Russia or the liberal media? Three choices, Russia, choice one, choice two, liberal media, choice three, neither at all. Well, the number one response was neither at all, 60%. And it's what, just like 500 votes so far, a couple hours left. So I mean, maybe I get 500-600 votes and that's it. So just a cross section, all right, of those who responded. But here's what's shocking. Out of the 40% that picked one, are you ready? 36% said Russia. 4% said liberal media. 36% said Russia. 4% said liberal media. There is massive distrust of the liberal media, especially from the conservative side, which means we have a great opportunity to raise our voice and speak because a lot of people question what they're hearing on the news, and many others will question what they're hearing on the conservative media side. And they don't know who to trust and who's putting out fake news and who isn't. So this is a great opportunity, friends, for us to speak up and make a difference because your voice will be heard by your circle of friends. And your voice will be heard by your family. And perhaps your voice will be heard in ways that you never imagined. We're next thing, people around the country know who you are or know what you have to say just because you spoke your mind one day. So one other word of advice, if you're going to post something, post it in a way that if it gets attention, you won't be embarrassed by it. How's that? Post it in such a way that it's going to glorify the Lord. We come back, going to talk to Robert Shibley about twisting Title IX. You see what that's what's that got to be do with me? You'll find out.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us on The Line of Fire. I had heard of Title IX in the past. I wasn't intimately familiar with it. But when President Obama and the Department of Justice began pushing issues of transgender activism, when we saw the response to HB 2 in North Carolina, the so-called bathroom bill, it drew a lot of attention to the subject of Title IX. And I'm joined by Robert L. Shibley. He is a graduate of Duke University and Duke University School of Law, and he is the executive director of FIRE. Another FIRE. We've been FIRE for many years, FIRE School of Ministry, FIRE standing for Fellowship for International Revival and Evangelism. He has been the leader of FIRE, which is Foundation for Individual Rights in Education. And he's got a little book put out by Encounter Books called Twisting Title IX. So I want Robert Shibley to fill us in on what we're dealing with. But Robert, first, welcome to the Line of Fire. Thanks for joining us today. Are you there, sir?
Yeah, thank you for having me.
All right, great to have you. Hey, Robert, before we get into this subject, tell me about your FIRE and what FIRE does.
Sure. FIRE was, my FIRE was founded in 1999 by two people, a professor at the University of Pennsylvania, Alan Charles Kors, who's a conservative, and a civil liberties attorney from Boston, Harvey Silverglate, who's liberal. And they wrote together a book called The Shadow University that came out in 1998, and it was subtitled The Betrayal of Liberty on America's Campuses, and talked about sort of the rise of what we now sort of call the movement behind political correctness and the way that people were being told that they couldn't have certain beliefs, they couldn't express certain things on campus. And the response to that book was so enormous that the next year, in 1999, they founded Our Fire. And I've been working there since 2003, and we've been the whole time defending free speech, freedom of religion, freedom of association, and due process on America's college and university campuses.
And where are things now compared to when you started?
Well, they're better in some ways and worse than others. One of the ways in which they're better is that FIRE for the last 8 or 9 years has been tracking written speech codes. These are rules at universities that actually prohibit students or provide for punishments for students who say or do things that are not popular with the authorities there. And when we started counting 8 or 9 years ago, 79% of the schools we looked at had what we call red light speech codes. That's really the very worst speech codes. Those are rules that are unconstitutional at public universities, and that if it's a private university, rules that violate their own promises of free speech. That number as of last year was down to about 40% of red light schools. So there's been a big improvement there. On the other hand, unfortunately, I think it's safe to say that the culture of free speech and a lot of other freedoms on campus has not gotten better. And of course, we've seen you know, more recently with the riots in Berkeley and the violence at Middlebury College over Charles Murray's appearance there, that you know, increasingly it seems like students have been miseducated both by college and in the K-12 arena to believe that shutting down people you agree with is the right thing to do, and if it takes violence, then that's also acceptable. And the fact is, it's not.
Yeah. So again, before we focus on your mini book on twisting Title IX. The atmosphere we have today with microaggressions and trigger warnings, I just wrote an article about a school in Canada that removed scales from the fitness room because that would trigger things for people. How in the world did we get to this place, especially in the name of diversity, tolerance, and inclusion?
Well, you know, that's a great question, and I think a lot of it is just sort of the cultural forces that have been really in the ascendant, you know, for a long time, certainly ever since I've been working at FIRE. I mean, there are clearly things that people wouldn't say now on campus that they would have been willing to say back when I was in school. And I hear that all the time from students when I tell them some stories from when I was in school. It wasn't that long ago, 1996 to 2000, and saying, oh, well, you could never get away with that. Today, there's this real sense on campuses that if there's not going to be official sanction, which there might be, there's certainly going to be a massive social sanction for stepping out of line and disagreeing with the majority.
Yeah. So, Robert, what's now happened with Title IX developments? First, for our listeners that aren't familiar with this, what is Title IX? Why was it instituted in the first place?
Title IX is the federal law that prohibits sex discrimination in federally funded education programs, and that includes pretty much all K-12 schools that are public and pretty much all public and private colleges and universities. There's only a few that don't take any federal money, including like Hillsdale and Grove City College and a few other like that. And Title IX simply says that those programs that get that money aren't allowed to engage in sex discrimination with actually a reasonably big number of exceptions like fraternities and sororities and Boys State and Girls State, et cetera. That was passed in 1972, and you know, from going back for the research for my book, you know, the couple issues that really came up there were the idea that there were still a number of public universities that were single sex or had programs that were single sex they wanted to open up, and of course, athletics was also an issue. And as I talk about in my book, it actually, after Title IX passed in 1972, by about 1985, you know, the athletic situation, the really gross disparity between men's and women's involvement had basically vanished. There's still a disparity, but it's much, much smaller. Instead, you know, Title IX is sort of the action has moved to this idea that it is the main way to prevent sexual harassment on campus.
All right. So with Title IX, when it talks about sex, did anyone ever think when these things were being put forward, when there is now a move to have women's sports and women being able to be women in these different athletic areas, et cetera, and programs that didn't exist before, was anyone confused about the meaning of sex then? Did everyone understand it simply meant biological sex?
Well, I didn't see any evidence that it meant anything different from that, you know, in the run-up and the, you know, certainly the congressional debate in 1972, which we went over. However, it wasn't very long after that it started getting sort of expanded into other areas, you know, and the one I talk about most in my book is the idea that sexual harassment is a form of sex discrimination. So it's not just something bad that you do to somebody else, but that it's actually a discriminatory thing, as opposed to just, you know, something that's morally wrong, and that therefore it can get brought under the umbrella of Title IX and is therefore a federal problem rather than, you know, a state or local or you know, just problem on your university campus.
All right. So what has now happened with Title IX, with President Obama, the Department of Justice, and even the way things are being used in the courts, where sex has become gender identity, and now Title IX, in effect, is being twisted and undermined?
Yeah, well, what's happened is that the Obama administration was very activist in making some, in really pushing, as I say, twisting the law pretty far. The one that really got fire involved was this so-called Dear Colleague letter from April 4th, 2011, where the Department of Education's Office for Civil Rights went so far as to actually dictate the standard of proof that had to be used in sexual misconduct cases on campus. So if you were accused of sexual misconduct, the claim by the department was that this 1972 law, which makes no mention of either discrimination or sexual misconduct, it doesn't make any harassment or sexual misconduct, said that you had to use the lowest possible standard of evidence when making those determinations. Preponderance of the evidence, that's a 50.01% likelihood standard for making that decision. Another thing they did just a couple of years later is dictate that to schools that they had to use a definition of sexual harassment, which was any unwelcome conduct of a sexual nature, including verbal conduct. And the reason that's problematic is that verbal conduct is just speech. And so we've seen this idea that speech can be sexually harassing applied to, for instance, a student at Temple. We had a grad student at Temple who was a veteran of the first Iraq War. He drove a tank there. And as part of his master's program, he wrote a paper opposed to women in the military. Well, that has something to do with sex. Obviously, it has to do with you know, the difference between men and women. And he took a controversial view on it that can make people uncomfortable and people didn't want to hear. And so you have issues like that where, you know, you think it sounds like kind of a reasonable definition, but when they start applying it, it turns out that if you step out of line and your opinions have anything to do with, you know, arguably sex, gender, sexual orientation, et cetera, you could find yourself in front of a campus tribunal.
All right, so tell you what, we come back, let's find out about these campus tribunals, and then a theme we've been on through this day is you can make a difference. Your voice can be heard. Parents, educators, students, I want you to listen carefully to Robert Shibley. This mini book, very helpful, Twisting Title IX. We'll be right back.
The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks for joining us on the Line of Fire. I'm speaking with Robert Shibley, who is the executive director of the Foundation for Individual Rights in Education, known as FIRE. Robert, what's your website for folks that want to take advantage of the resources there?
That's right. Our website is thefire.org. That's thefire.org.
All right. So let's talk about a campus tribunal. What have folks been subject to that have spoken out, written something, done something that went against the PC grain of the campus? What's actually happened? When you refer to a campus tribunal, that's not just a hypothetical or metaphorical term, is it?
No, that's right. Most campuses, in fact, just about all the ones I'm familiar with, have a sort of pseudo-judicial process that's basically the equivalent of a trial. Usually you don't get very much in the way of due process for those trials. So, for instance, sometimes you may not even know who's accusing you. You may not know all the evidence against you. Most of the time you don't get an attorney. You know, nobody is under oath, et cetera. But in any case, these tribunals don't just handle, and I think most people think of them as like cheating cases. They also handle cases of assault and battery and even sexual assault. So when it comes to these really serious things, these crimes that are felony crimes, colleges are still having their own little trials for them. So that's a problem in and of itself. And, you know, when the college has a rule against saying certain speech, those are the very same people you get in front of. We had one female student at Oregon I talk about in my book who got in trouble for yelling, "I hit it first," out her window. A four-word joke got her 5 conduct charges, including sexual harassment. Another professor, a feminist professor at Northwestern, wrote an article in the Chronicle of Higher Education, which is higher education's main trade publication, talking about how she didn't really think Northwestern was doing a good job with Title IX and thought that it was being overly paranoid. And she was investigated under Title IX for writing an article criticizing Title IX. So it can really be, you know, just about anything. And the punishments can range anything from a slap on the wrist to expulsion.
Yeah. And again, these are real things happening on campuses. We've tracked it, especially on LGBT issues with conservative Christians and things like that, and free speech issues with friends with the Alliance Defending Freedom and Liberty Council often dealing with these. So this is going on. There is an assault on freedom of speech and freedom of conscience and religion on our campuses. There are many professors that are loath to really share their viewpoints for fear of losing their tenure track and things like that, and they have to almost keep their views to themselves. It is an oppressive view on campuses, and yet there is progress being made, as you said at the outset. So Robert, what can your average person do? You're a parent sending their kid to college. They're distressed by what's happening. A student on a college, a faculty member. What can they do, and what will FIRE help them do?
Well, if it's a student or faculty member who's being silenced on campus or finding their freedom of religion or any of these other aspects of the First Amendment that FIRE handles, if they're finding those under attack, they can submit a case on FIRE's website, thefire.org, and that's sort of the bread and butter of what we do. We defend those folks. through public advocacy and sometimes, if necessary, through legal action as well. If they are a parent or alumnus, as many are, universities, with few exceptions, the really big and rich universities are less subject to this. But universities are quite sensitive to public relations, and they're also sensitive to people who are donors and people who are tuition payers, opinions on things. And so, I would love to have, the parents and alumni of each university that we deal with take the initiative to write in. And often you can do that from FIRE's website. We have a take action function. But simply writing or calling the university and expressing your displeasure can go a really long way towards making a change here. These folks aren't used to getting hundreds or thousands of emails and calls. And I think in many cases, people talk about a bubble and academia being an ivory tower. And I think in many cases, they don't really realize just how far they've diverged from sort of mainstream thought when it comes to, the actions that they take. And sometimes they need to be reminded of that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I had two PhDs on with me yesterday. One, a professor who basically had to leave his school and go teach at a Christian school because of the opposition he had in the humanities. He said he was the only one out of 150 professors that held to certain conservative views. And when he just spoke up for them as a former homosexual who had been raised by two lesbians, by his mother and her partner, when he began to talk about his life experience and why it's better to have a mom and dad and so on, he got censored and attacked in every way. And they basically said, we've got enough complaints against you that if you try to stay here for your tenure, we're going to come against you, and felt it's better to be in a different environment. And he was basically saying, we've got to look a totally different way for higher education, others challenging this. So on the one hand, yes, let us strengthen Christian schools and universities and encourage folks not to bow down to the God of accreditation and to be more concerned about the well-being of their kids and the nurturing of their kids and the environment in which they're going to be. But I also believe we must challenge the massive secular education system on every level, and we can do it with our dollars. Our money speaks, doesn't it?
Money certainly speaks, and in many cases, like you said, professors who are on the tenure track or have not yet been tenured are particularly sort of threatened if they have any kind of dissenting views. And so it's tough for them, but professors who are tenured, they're scared to speak out too. And the more who speak out, there's a real false sense that you're alone.
Yes.
In these cases. And granted, look, it is very disproportionately, obviously politically, universities lean to the left, but that doesn't mean you're alone. And there's a lot of people on the left who would also like to hear those viewpoints, but unfortunately, I think they're generally drowned out. These days, or the sense is that they're drowned out by people who are ready to condemn you if you step out of the political line. And the more people who aren't willing to play that game, the better off everyone will be.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, there is, even though we are in the minority on the secular campuses, there's still a critical mass of people speaking up. There are respected scholars, there are respected intellectuals who are conservatives who challenge the current PC madness that we often see on our campuses. And if people just start to speak out and follow the Jesus principle, that I'm not trying to save my life, I'm trying to do what's right, then we'd see a whole lot of progress. Robert, once more, please give our listeners your website.
Yeah, it's thefire.org, and please come and visit and donate if you're so inclined, and please get involved. If you see, you can look up your school on there. We rate 440 of the biggest and most prestigious ones. Look up your school, and if you don't like what they're doing, send them a note.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, if enough of us speak, there will be change. If enough of us act, there will be change. If we do nothing, we can guarantee it's going to continue to go in the wrong direction. Hey, from a fellow fire man to the head of another fire, God bless. Keep up the great work.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
All right, you bet. All right, friends, 866-34-TRUTH, the number to call. I haven't even had a second to take a call yet, but who do you trust more, Russia or the liberal media? We'll be right back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
So how much do you distrust secular media right now? This is Michael Brown. Welcome to the Line of Fire, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution, the place where you can go to get the record set right. Hey, there are areas of expertise I have, and I will do my best to address those and comment on those and make them as clear as I can. And there are areas where I do not have expertise, and I'll be the first to tell you that I do not have that expertise and that I've got an opinion maybe to throw into the mix for discussion. So we are going to speak of that which we know. We'll speak with authority in areas where we can speak with authority, speak with clarity in areas where we can't. And in other places, we'll bring on other guests to speak. But what I find fascinating is right now, there is massive distrust in the media in general. I would assume that those that are strongly on the left totally distrust those on the right. They distrust the Rush Limbaughs and the Sean Hannitys and the Mark Levins and the other prominent conservative voices. They deeply mistrust them and say, it's all fake news. What's fascinating is that those on the right are not just distrusting the MSNBCs and the CNNs, but the New York Times and the Washington Post. In other words, the secular media in general is looked at as so biased, as so inaccurate, as so untrustworthy, as so promoting a particular agenda without a clear factual basis, without the ability to report the news rather than to create the news, that there is such massive distrust that when I did a Twitter poll, mentioned this earlier in the show, but I want to come back to it. I did a Twitter poll and I asked my Twitter followers as to who they trusted more, Russia or the secular media, or neither at all. Now, you think Russia, I mean, it's been historic enemy in certain ways, and the Iron Curtain and tensions between Obama and Putin and you know, was Russia trying to undermine our elections and all this stuff, and Russia being a friend of Iran and us being opposed to Iran and all this and being dictatorial and oppressive and you know, all the things that we think about, the negative things we think about Russia, and Donald Trump constantly criticized for not taking a harder stand against Putin and so on. Yet when I asked folks on Twitter who they trusted more, whether it was Russia or the secular media or neither, all right, 60% said neither. Didn't trust either of them at all. 4% said they trusted the secular media more. 36%, so 9-1, said they trusted Russia more than the secular media. So I wonder where you stand on that. Does that seem extreme to you? Does that seem crazy to you? You say, I understand that. 866-348-7884. What it means is the door is wide open for another narrative. What it means is the door is wide open for other truth tellers to rise up. What it means is the door is wide open to challenge the pop narrative, to challenge what the media is saying, to shout out the emperor has no clothes, to say, hey, wait a second, this is wrong. Hey, wait a second, we don't agree with this. And just because you're saying it from behind a TV camera or over the radio or in print in a newspaper doesn't mean it has any authority or any credence. In fact, we're starting to question everything you say until we see more facts. What a great time for the truth of the gospel to arise in the midst of a culture which has had its fill of, quote, fake news. We'll be right back.
Flame, send the fire.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks so much for joining us on The Line of Fire, 866-348-7884. I want to play some clips for you. This is Tucker Carlson, Planned Parenthood discussion. He's talking to Executive VP Dawn Lagwins, not sure of the pronunciation of her last name. And this was from March 13th on Fox News. So, Johnny, let's grab clip number six, Tucker Carlson interacting with a Planned Parenthood executive.
So Planned Parenthood does provide an awful lot of abortions every year. I think over 300,000. I think that's right, in that range. And the majority of them are after 5.5 weeks. That's the point at which the fetal heartbeat can be detected. I'm just wondering, as someone who works there, what do you think of that? What is being aborted? If you can hear the heartbeat, what is that thing that's being aborted? How do you feel about that?
Well, abortion is a right in this country. Women have their own views on whether or not they want to be pregnant. That is not a viable fetus at 5.5 weeks. Anyone knows that. And what you would do is make your own choice. And that's all Planned Parenthood has ever said, is that every woman should make their own choice.
Right, but since you work at the country's biggest... But I mean, what specifically do you think? You work at the country's biggest abortion provider. If you can hear the heartbeat of this thing, this fetus, what is it? Is it just a piece of tissue, or is it a separate human being?
I think that's up to each individual to decide what they believe.
I'm sorry to laugh. This is the laugh of incredulity. This is the laugh of, you've got to be kidding me. It's up to each individual to decide what that beating heart is? It's up to each individual to decide what that beating heart is? Is that a baby? Is that a child? Is that a mass of tissues? Is that just a clump of cells? What is it? That human being there that was injured in a car accident and that's hovering between life and death, it's up to us to decide. Well, we got a pulse here. Well, what does that pulse mean? Does that pulse mean that's a human being? Does that pulse mean that it's just a biological entity of some kind? No, you know what it means? That person is alive. It's a person and the person is alive. You don't redefine the person, redefine the situation based on your ethic about it. What kind of nonsense is that? What kind of science is that? It's up to each person to decide whether that beating heart is human or not. You've got to be kidding me. So let's go to clip number eight as the discussion continues. Good for Tucker Carlson.
People say, look, this is killing a life. A heart is beating. You can hear it at 5.5 weeks. And the majority of your abortions take place after 5.5 weeks. So I want to know if that bothers you at all. Does it at all? Do you ever stop and think, wow, what is happening here? Is a life being taken? People say a life is being taken. Do you think that?
I personally favor safe legal abortion in this country, decided on by each individual woman and her doctor to decide for themselves. I personally do not believe that is a viable fetus at that point.
And
there are rules are rules we follow.
Why are you
Roe
giving me robotic
Wade laid
responses?
Out.
I'm asking you a human question, and I hope you'll favor me with a human answer. I'm not saying it's viable. At 5.5 weeks, it's not, but you can hear the heartbeat. Is that a human being or not? Is it separate from the mother or not? A different blood type, often a different sex, different DNA? It doesn't seem like a tumor or something that is connected to the woman wholly. It's distinct. What does that mean? I would think you would have thought about it, considering you provide more of them than anyone. Is that
I
a crazy
have thought
question?
About it very much for myself, but I am not going to project onto other women what I believe.
Since when does what I believe or not believe determine reality? Here, you have women that have something called hysterical pregnancy, that it is an emotional thing and it's triggered certain things in their body and they think they're pregnant and they even begin to have signs of pregnancy and there's no baby in there. They can believe all they want to believe, but it doesn't create a baby in the womb. I can, as a man, believe that I'm pregnant. I believe, well, thankfully I'm thin now, but when I was heavier, well, my stomach was getting bigger because there's a baby in there. I could believe that all I want, but it did not create a baby in the womb when there was none. Conversely, you can say it's not a baby all you want. You can deny the humanity of that child in the womb all you want. You can say that those little fingers and those little hands are just part of a fetus, as if that made it non-human. You could say that the fact that you can actually make out the face in the ultrasound, that the baby just kicked the mother's, you know, insides, and now daddy's got his hand on the stomach, and boo, he can feel that kick. You can say that it's just a clump of cells. It doesn't deny the humanity of that baby in the womb. It doesn't deny the reality of when that heart starts beating and when that baby starts to experience things and feel certain things. It doesn't deny the reality of any of that. It's not a choice. Now look, let me put a different spin on these words. When we say as pro-life people, it's a person, not a choice. Let's take it further. It's a person, and it's not your choice to say it's not a person. It's a person, and it's not your choice to deny the personhood of that person. What if I deny the personhood of non-Jews? Well, you're not a Jew. You're not a person. Others have denied the personhood of Jews. You're just varmint. You're just parasites. You should be exterminated. What if I denied the personhood of Black Americans or Hispanic or Blacks or Hispanics, period, or Asians? You're not Caucasian, you're not a person. Does that make them not persons? If someone denies my personhood as a white man, does that make me not a person? No, your opinion, your interpretation about what is a person and what is not a person does not define what makes someone a person. It does not deny biological reality. It does not deny physical reality. This idea that it's subjective, everybody can choose. Here, listen. I'm expressing myself very clearly for good reason here. I want you to hear this again. Tell me, am I getting worked up over nothing? Let's just listen again to clip number 8, the interaction of Tucker Carlson and an executive VP with Planned Parenthood.
People say, look, this is killing a life. A heart is beating. You can hear it at 5.5 weeks. And the majority of your abortions take place after 5.5 weeks. So I want to know if that bothers you at all. Does it at all? Do you ever stop and think, wow, what is happening here? Is a life being taken? People say a life is being taken. Do you think that?
I personally favor safe legal abortion in this country, decided on by each individual woman and her doctor to decide for themselves. I personally do not believe that is a viable fetus at that point,
and
there are rules rules we follow.
Why are you
Roe
giving
v.
me robotic
Wade
responses?
Laid out.
I'm asking you a human question, and I hope you'll favor me with a human answer. I'm not saying it's viable. At 5.5 weeks, it's not, but you can hear the heartbeat. Is that a human being or not? Is it separate from the mother or not? A different blood type, often a different sex, different DNA? It doesn't seem like a tumor or something that is connected to the woman wholly. It's distinct. What does that mean? I would think you would have thought about it, considering you provide more of them than anyone. Is that
I
a
have
crazy
thought
question?
About it very much for myself, but I am not going to project onto other women what I believe.
You better believe you are projecting onto other women what you believe. You better believe you are, because you're fighting for Planned Parenthood, and you're fighting for funding for Planned Parenthood. Oh, and isn't it ironic? Isn't it ironic that Planned Parenthood tells us Planned Parenthood tells us that none of their federal funding goes for abortions, correct? How many times are we told that? None of the federal funding that we receive at Planned Parenthood goes for abortions, and abortions only make up 3% of our income, right? Correct? That's what we hear all the time. And yet we're told that if Planned Parenthood is defunded, that women will not be able to get abortions. How's that? If they're providing all these mammograms, which of course they don't, you call, go ahead. I mean, many people have called to expose this, that no, you can't actually go to Planned Parenthood and get a mammogram. And there's certain services that they're providing, but there are plenty of other medical clinics that provide those very services. Why not give them the federal funding? So if none of the federal funding is being used for abortion and you cut off the federal funding, then how on earth is it going to affect abortions? If I said every dime that you give to this radio show is going to help us feed poor people in Uganda, all right? Every dime you give to us is going to help feed poor people in Uganda. And if you stop giving to us, we're going to go off the air. Wait a second. That would mean that we're not feeding the people in Uganda. That would mean that we're using the money to stay on the air. So the hypocrisy, the shouting loud hypocrisy of Planned Parenthood is mind-boggling. The fact that when you go there for an abortion, they don't say, have you considered your options? And many will tell you that used to work there, they have to push hard to meet quota. They have to bring in more money. They have to get more people to abort. And again, saying, I believe what you believe does not change the facts. I can believe that I'm Mickey Mouse right now. It doesn't change the facts. We'll be right back.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
It was a few years back where some of my friends that were strongly in the pro-life movement were all excited about Dr. Seuss's Horton Hears a Who. Because remember the message of the book, A Person's a Person, No Matter How Small. And this was used to help further fuel the fires of the pro-life movement. So let me encourage you, friends. The emperor has no clothes. The emperor has no clothes. So much of the activism coming our way, so much of the social activism coming our way, so much of the whole push to undo gender distinctions, to glorify abortion, to redefine marriage. The emperor has no clothes. And look, I use this as an example, and my article went viral, that when I simply said, I'm sorry, but Caitlyn Jenner is a man wearing a dress. Now, normally I would refer to Bruce Jenner, but to make the point, I said, Caitlyn Jenner is a man wearing a dress. When he speaks, he's still a man. When he goes to the bathroom, he's a man. He can still reproduce as a man. I mean, that's the testosterone, the hormones he's on have changed things, but he fathered children as a man. He's a man. He's a man wearing a dress. He may be a confused man. He may be a hurting man. He may be a sinning man, whatever. He's a man wearing a dress. And when I said it, it's just like this thing went electric. On different websites started getting shared left and right, you know, much more than something I'd normally write. And of course, so many people know this, but very few would say it because you don't want to offend. And well, I don't want to offend someone, but at the same time, I've got to be realistic. I've got to tell the truth, right? When our daughters were growing up, they were teenagers, and they put on an outfit, and they'd say, hey, Mom, does this make me look fat? And she'd say, yeah. And they go, Mom, that hurts my feelings. She'd say, well, don't ask. You asked me, I gave you my opinion. I'll write something and tell Nancy, hey, tell me what you think of it, and I'll get it back all marked up in red. Why is she doing that? Because she wants to help me. She believes in what I wrote, wants to help me write even better. That's good. That's not bad. What does it say in Proverbs 27? Open rebuke is better than secret love. And the kisses of an enemy are profuse, but faithful are the wounds of a friend. So it's good when we speak the truth in love. It's good when we reveal the error of a false and destructive position. How much more when it comes to something like abortion? The great plague, the great blight of the last generation. I think over 50 million abortions performed worldwide every year. And in America, over 50 million abortions since Roe v. Wade. A tragedy beyond proportion, a dehumanizing of our culture beyond proportion. A sin with all kinds of consequences of which we're hardly aware. Yes, to all of the above, it has been a horrible plague, and it's been a terrible plague on the women who've had abortions that bear the pain afterwards, sometimes the physical consequences, more often the emotional consequences, the spiritual consequences. Thankfully, there's redemption, there's forgiveness in Jesus for the men who participated in these things. Yes, there's redemption, but this has been a terrible plague on our society. I interviewed a 16-year-old girl in the first half hour of the show, and she said, this is the pro-life generation. We're the ones that are coming up with a different viewpoint. We're the ones that are being raised with a different viewpoint. We're ones that have seen the ultrasounds and can't deny the evidence. So In short, this is the time to address the stronghold of lies. The stronghold of lies that it's just a clump of tissue or massive cells in the woman's body. Those are lies. Those are scientific lies. Those are biological lies. Those are chromosomal lies. I asked the question the other day. My friend Larry Tomczyk said something, and it prompted me to tweet this out. Why is it a baby bump when the mother decides to keep the baby, but it's a massive tissue bump or a lump of cells bump if she decides to kill it? That now changed the reality of that human being inside the womb? When we begin to say enough is enough with the activism, enough is enough with a man using a woman's locker room, and now the woman just has to change in his presence because he identifies as a woman. Enough with that. Yeah, it bothers me that this man is struggling and suffers from what we call gender identity confusion. Yeah, that concerns me. That hurts me. I yes, absolutely. I feel for that person. But we are not going to impose his confusion on the rest of society. We're not going to impose his confusion on everyone else that's not confused. Use my standard analogy. If you have a blind kid in school, you do your best to help that child and work with that child with Braille text and things like that, and someone maybe to take them by the hand to walk them down the hallway. But you don't order the whole school to close their eyes and read Braille. Yet when it comes to kids that are confused about gender issues and things like that, When they're confused, we now want to impose that on the whole school. The 16-year-old boy gets to play on the 16-year-old girl's sports team. And that means there's a girl that's not going to make that team, and maybe a girl that was going to be better and get a scholarship that she may not even make it. And now the other girls have to be uncomfortable with a biological male in their locker room. And by the way, if this kid identifies as transgender and not as gay, then they would still say, well, yeah, even though I identify as a woman, doesn't mean I'm attracted to men. I'm still attracted to women. Oh, great. Wonderful. In the same locker room and shower stall. No, you do not turn the world upside down to help the struggling person. So why is it when you offer solutions, say, to trans activists and say, hey, here's a handicap bathroom you can use and it's gender neutral? No. I identify as a woman. I want to use the woman's bathroom. Why must you impose that on everybody else? Why not say, okay, here's a viable solution? So we need, friends, to keep speaking up. We need to keep raising our voices. We need to keep exposing that the emperor has no clothes. Somebody challenged me earlier. They made this ridiculous statement on Twitter, and they said that in the Bible, God is referred to as he and she. And I said, never referred to as she. Yes, we'll have the characteristics of a mother, motherly care, motherly love, but it's referred to as he and his father, but God transcends gender. God is not transgender. God transcends gender. Oh, no. Many times in the Bible, God's referred to as she. I said, give me one. What do I get? Accusations for trying to show I'm superior or something. Just give me one example. That's all we need. One. Of course, there are none. So the arguments break down when we hold them up to the light. So keep holding them up to the light. The household of the house of cards that's built on lies is going to crumble as we keep speaking the truth. And friends, I'm on the air to keep speaking the truth. Pray for me. We're on the front lines, on the radio, writing books, preaching, teaching, TV, getting the message out everywhere we know how, training people in our school of ministry, speaking the truth. We need your help. Pray for us. Stand with us. Believe God with us. Share these podcasts with your friends. Turn them on to the broadcast. As you feel led, stand with us. Help us with your one-time gifts. Become a monthly supporter. Or simply invest in the resources we have for you in our store. All the books and DVDs and different series and audio downloads. Take advantage of them. As you do that, you're helping us get the message out. Go to thelineoffire.org. My bottom line today, you have a voice. And together, we're making a difference.